Okay, before we get started, I'm going to ask God, God, please help me let go of everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let me let go of all my old ideas. Allow me to see your truth so I can live on it. Help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Okay, on Wednesday night, those listening on the podcast, we are now on step four. We did the two pages on fear last week. I do the second step proposition exercise on fear, but we're not going to do that tonight because I'm going to be gone a couple Wednesdays rehabbing, and so we'll do that when I come back. It's called second step proposition exercise because it's based on the question, is God everything or nothing? And when I have God as nothing, I have fear in any area of my life that I'm running. And so it's powerful stuff. We've gone through it quite a few times. I always get something out of it. It's from a Fellowship of the Spirit 2001 by Dave F. And I got the PDF years ago, and we've gone through it quite a few times. Saturday, we're on the 11th step, and we're going to finish up pages 788. And it's really, if you haven't studied or if you haven't read in a while, it's, I don't know, you get emotional. It's so powerful, the words. And we're going to finish that Saturday and Sunday night. We are in There is a Solution, and we're going to look at page 25, which tells us there is a solution. And that's another one of those pages that when you read, you get more out of it every time. Tonight we're on page 68, and it says at the third paragraph, we talk about fear. It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator, right? We laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. I don't get strong till I admit I'm weak, until I'm broken and I know with the humility of being broken and seeking God, then I get his strength. Faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. And if you trust God, that gives you courage. We never apologize for God. Instead, here's the instructions. I want to let him demonstrate through me all the time what he can do. If you like the meeting tonight, it's God. If you don't like it, it's me. That was a joke. Nobody laughed. All right. It's a tough crowd. We ask him to remove our fear. This is the prayer I use all the time. God, remove my fear. And then here's the part that people don't remember. Direct my attention to what he would have me be. And I was working on the steps tonight. And if you don't know what you should be, look at the St. Francis prayer. And and then at once you begin the outgrow of fear. Wouldn't that be great? Fear, I know when I came in, my whole life was fear. I was swimming in it. Now I see fear differently, and it doesn't dominate me. Just another thing, I don't emphasize this enough, but you know, we read the book and we are studying how to do the directions and the steps, and the steps are important. Anybody agree with that? But the steps are to produce a result, and the result is my relationship with God. And really, the title of the big book should be God is the Answer. I mean, that's what the whole book is about. There's one who has all power, and that one solves our problems. And so all of we're reading, every time we study or get together, we should see how this points us to dependence on God, relationship with him. The central fact and the great fact is something that we have to remember all the time because it's going to come up tonight when we look at the sex inventory. But it says, the central fact of my life is the absolute certainty, that my Creator has entered in my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. God has commenced to accomplish those things for me which I could not do by myself. And that's the central fact of the people who wrote this book, and it's the central fact of my life today, and it's a great gift. Now, we're on page 68. We're looking at these four steps. We've looked at resentment, and then we're looking at fear. And the third thing we look at is sex. It says, now about sex. Now, why do you think they had sex as a manifestation of a life run on self-will? Because I don't think anything screwed up alcoholics more than our romantic relationships, And so they felt that it's very important that we look at this in our fourth step to see how we blocked ourselves from God in this area of our life and how we harm so many people. It says about sex, many of us need an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible in this question. And you can also use this for relationships, but it's really talking about romantic relationships in these next few pages. It says, it's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes. Have you ever seen opinions at an AA meeting? That doesn't happen, doesn't it? Absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage. Now, the other thing is, this was written in 1939. It was a whole different world there. It was a whole different world in terms of divorces, families, staying together. Our whole society was different. And it says, some people think most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. What is it, sex, money, and power? Is that the three things? If you've got something going on in your life, it involves sex, money, or power. They think that we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. So a lot of people have opinions of this area. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no favor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. I think that's a key line. We should read that before every meeting. We want to stay out of controversy. I probably already started tonight. Who knows? And it says, we do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. Remember, the sex instinct is normal. It's God-given. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? What can we do about our sex problems? Now, in the next few page, we're going to see so many spiritual principles that we can practice in our affairs. And a lot of people say you shouldn't have a relationship in the first year. Have you heard that? It's not in the big book. It's one of those things that was made up. So I always wondered, on day 366, I can have a relationship, but 365, I can't. I never really understood that. But what they're saying, what I said and what I wrote a thought on this on the site, and I wrote, I recommend that before you get into a new romantic relationship, you might want to do the sex inventory. And we're going to see why. It's very helpful. And the other thing about a relationship, you don't want to get in a relationship in the first year. But I ask those people, well, what about the decision in the third step to get into a relationship with God? So relationships aren't bad. It's just, we're going to see, what are my motives in the relationships? What do I bring in? What do I expect to get? How am I acting in the relationships? So it says, we reviewed our conduct over the years past. So that's the first instruction. You review your conduct. You can list all the people, or you can look at your conduct, and then they're going to ask a question. There are a series of questions here. I think they're six questions, and there are three prayers, and there's a lot of spiritual principles. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? So that's the first question. So you could say, in my whole life, where was I selfish in a sex relationship? Where was I dishonest or inconsiderate? And dishonest can be in a lot of ways. Not it's not that you lied, it's that you weren't honest about your feelings or your motives. And I saw that I had a horrible marriage, and then I realized that, you know, she had her issues and this and that, and we all did, but I wasn't honest about how I really felt about her. And so I stayed in the marriage out of fear, because I was afraid of losing money and the kids, but I really didn't care about her anymore. And so I could see that I was wrong too in that. And it really helps you see that. If you could look at your relationships, where had you been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And inconsiderate, this is where they add that word that I always say, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, fearful, or inconsiderate. Inconsiderate, not being respectful of other people, tolerant, loving towards them. Then the next question is, whom had we hurt? So you can look back, you could make a list of names and answer the questions, or you could look at selfish and put the names down, dishonest. Some of these names, I think, are on your resentment list. So it shouldn't be, you'll see them in a different light. It'll help you look at them differently. Whom had we hurt? So this is how you're going to look at your amends in 8 and 9. And then how had you hurt them? That's the question, too. If you have to know how you hurt them to see how you can make it right. And then the fourth is, did you unjustly arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Unjustifiably arouse these things. Now, some people were suspicious or bitter or jealous of us, but that was their own issue. And then they blamed us for their feelings. We'll look at what we did. What did I do? And then it says, where was I at fault? It doesn't say them. And what should I have done instead? And if you go to a lot of meetings and you see new people come in, a lot of times they talk about relationships that have gone south or bad. And then you have to, they're new, they don't understand, but it says we have to look at where we're at fault and what we should have done instead. Powerful questions. So for each name, or in the past, or when you had your resentment list of relationships that you had some resentments in, you could look at these questions. Why? It's just like looking at anger. You want to see a pattern of your relationships and see a pattern so you can see the truth about them. And you can see how you hurt people and how your character defects had come into play and what you could have done instead. And you put this down on paper and looked at it, so it should be a written inventory. And why do we want to do this? Because we want to try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. What do they mean by that? I want to have a different way of looking at interactions with human beings in all areas of my life, and especially in an intimate relationship. And I want it to be shaped on, and I want it to be God-centered. So you're going to subject each relationship to the test, was it selfish or not? Great question. And if you're really honest about it, a lot of these relationships, you could see how we were so selfish. Doesn't excuse their behavior. We're not looking at them, we're looking at ourselves. I don't want to be selfish in any area of my life anymore, do I? And I certainly don't want to be selfish in my relationships. So you subject, and if you're going to have a relationship now, ask yourself, is it selfish or not? What are your motives? What are you bringing into it? And that's the next line. I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask God to mold my ideals. So you should write your ideals for your future sex life, and then you're going to ask God to mold them and to help you live up to them. Now, these are your ideals, not your ideals for the other person. There's a difference, too. This is what I'm bringing in. This is what I want to bring, because it comes back to I get what I bring. And if I'm bringing selfish, dishonest motives, I get it back. If I bring love, I get love back. What are you bringing? What are you bringing into the relationships? And you're going to ask God to mold your ideals, so you have to spend some time trying to find out what your ideals are, and that's a prayer too. What should my ideals be? And isn't this really, well, we must carry a vision of God's will into all of our activities? What is God's will for me in this relationship? How should I be? What am I bringing in? And again, I like the St. Francis prayer. And I like the LPTKCTCC. Love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerate, compassion. We came up with that because Brian's back there and a few others through the years. We all have that other person, right? And I'd say, well, how is she doing? And we go, LPTKCC. Lyle's not here. He's going on a trip. And he says, we just said LPTKCC. Patty was driving, I was talking to Lyle, and I said, LPTKCC, you know, it just works. And what it means is we're all human beings. We have to, how we see what we bring in, we get. And it goes back to that acceptance is the answer chapter. When he stopped looking at his wife's fault, she got better. Nothing changed about her, but when he stopped criticizing her and judging her, she became this beautiful person, and he'd made her into a horrible person by his criticizing and behavior. And so I have to remember that all the time. So I want God to mold my ideals and help me live up to them. And I wrote how we should be. How should I be all the time? Not just in sex and intimate relationships, but with all human beings. But these are the ones where we have all these emotions attached. Remember, alcoholics are emotional people, and we don't want our emotions out of control because then we'll drink, right? Mm-hmm. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. And so we want to be different in our relationships than we were, and we don't want to harm people, and we don't want to be selfish and inconsiderate, and we don't want to harm people. And it says, whatever our ideals turn out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. And so I wrote, willing to grow towards God's vision. You see, I have to have God's vision, and I suggest that you spend some time when you look at this, and in prayer and meditation, asking God how he wants you to be. And so, and then you must be willing to grow toward it, and you must be willing to make amends where you have done harm. So willingness is really important. And how do you become willing to grow towards it? You know, how do you do that? Because when you've looked back on your on what you wrote on the paragraph before, you don't want to be that person anymore, right? When you look at your conduct, you don't want to do that anymore. So you want to grow towards a different way. And you must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, but provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. I don't think you should start working the steps and go to your exes or people you had relationships with and try to start making amends till you've worked the steps up to this point, and until you've gotten 8 and 9, and you've looked at it with your sponsor, because you could make more harm to people. And the other thing about amends, and we're not on amends now, we want to mend a relationship. We want to make it right. And it's really not about asking for forgiveness from the other person. It's making it right. How can I clean my side of the street? How can I make it right? I don't know how to do that till I see how I've harmed someone. And I've seen what I've actually done. And so then it becomes helpful. And when I see how I've harmed people in the past, I don't want to harm someone today. I don't want to be the same person. I don't know about you, but the longer you're sober, when you look back, you could see these things come to mind. You could see how, you know, I really shouldn't have been that way. I really wasn't the person God created. You don't want to be that way anymore. You don't beat yourself up because you learn from it, but it's a reminder that you want to stay going in this other direction, and you don't want to repeat the mistakes you've made in the past. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. So in every problem, you ask God's ideal. You must be willing to grow towards God's ideal in every situation. And you can ask these questions about all relationships. And then it has the next prayer and meditation, ask God what we should do about each specific matter. That could be any problem, right? They're getting any other problem, treat sex as with any problem. So ask God what I should do about each specific matter. Anything you have, we talked about that before the meeting, I have to go to God. That's why I said God is the answer. Go to God, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. Go to God, what I should do. Now, a lot of people like to do the next right thing, right? Is that good? Good, it makes sense, but I have to ask God what I do about each specific matter. Go to God to find out the next right thing. Because when I was doing all this harm and all this inconsiderate, selfish behavior, I thought it was the next right thing. And so I don't have that, I don't want to be in charge of my life anymore, right? I want God to be in charge, so I want him to direct me. So I want to ask him what I should do about each specific matter. And the right answers will come if we want it. I love that one. So a lot of times, I would pray to God what I should do, but I already knew what I wanted to do, right? And then the right answer came because it was my answer, and that it may have been the wrong one. So I have to really get my ego out of it, seeking God completely, 100%, and then if I want it, do I want it? And I wrote, this is true for every situation, and I wrote, instead of the next right thing, I want to say I'm going to do the next God thing. I want to do the next God thing. I want to stay out of my judgment of what's right or wrong. And it said God alone can judge our sex situation. And remember, we're not to judge anybody anymore. And so we let God judge us. And then we have prayer meditation with God. And we do all this that we've just covered in three paragraphs. And then that'll help us to change how we want to be with God's help. And I wrote, ask God to mold my ideals and help me live up to them in every area of my life. Counsel with persons is often desirable. You get a lot of counseling at meetings. I've heard somebody bring up a relationship issue and you'll have like 40 minutes on it. And it's fun, but I don't know that any real answers are coming there. But we let God be the final judge. And we realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. I think that's true of everything. Does anybody here ever give advice to people? I know I do, and I shouldn't. I should share my experience. I should only share my experience of what I've had in that area, and I try to do that. But we all fall back into giving advice. It's not that it's right or wrong, but what I really want to give is my experience. And if I don't have any experience in some area, I shouldn't be giving advice. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. Now here's a powerful four or five lines. And this is true of every area of my life. It depends on me and my motives. What were my motives? Now remember, when I wake up every morning, I ask God to direct my thinking, and I ask him to divorce my thinking from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. And so motives are mentioned several times in the big book. My motives will drive my behavior. And I want my motives to be God-centered. If we're sorry for what we have done, and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. And this is true of everything we do. A lot of times we beat ourselves down, we make mistakes, right? But if we're sorry for what we had done and have the honest desire to let God take me to better things, we believe I will be given, we'll have learned our lesson. Now it says on the 11-step review, nightly review, we ask God's forgiveness, right? And what corrective measures should be taken. So we go to God. And if you're not sorry for what you've done, then you're in trouble. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. They didn't mince words there, did they? So we don't want to have conduct that continues to harm others because really we're harming ourselves, right? And remember, we made decisions based on self, which put us in a position to be harmed and harm others. And isn't that what we're really asking on 69? Do we make decisions based on self and our sex relationships that cause us to harm others and to harm ourselves? We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So this was their experience. And if people didn't feel sorry for their conduct and they continue to harm people, they're going to drink. And what happens is, if you're not sorry and you continue to harm others, you get angry at the people you've harmed, right? And then you blame them for decisions you made on self. And then you, it says to drink, to when we have resentment, we die from that, right? To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal. We want the right ideal. And here's the thing, guidance in each questionable situation. So I wrote, this is the third prayer, and I wrote A, B, C, D. And I need to remember this. I incorporate, when I'm studying this, I'm going to incorporate this into my daily prayer. I want the right ideal for every situation. I want guidance in each questionable situation from God, and give me the right ideal. And the sanity, being able to see the truth about it, and for the strength to do the right thing. So the right ideal is God's vision for me. Guidance in each questionable situation is the power to carry that out, knowledge of it, and the power to carry that out. Sanity is to be able to see the truth of the situation and the strength to do the right thing. Powerful. You can use that as a prayer for everything in your life, but especially in your relationships. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves a little harder into helping others. Why does helping others always work? Because it gets you out of yourself. And you're turning away from your self-centered thinking, and you're turning it to other people. So if you're ever disturbed, really, about something in your life that's really bothering you, get out of yourself and see who you can help. It doesn't say alcoholics, just helping anybody. And we think of their needs and work for them. Powerful lines. Throw ourselves the harder into helping others. Think of their needs and work for them. And remember, it says our main purpose, our real purpose in AA is to do what? Fit ourselves maximally, God and others. There you go. It's right there, and it's right here in this. This takes us out of ourselves. On page 84, it says, we watch for selfishness, desires, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss it with someone else. We make amends to anyone we've harmed. And then we resolutely turn my thoughts to those I can help. So I have to remember that, because sometimes you like the stew and the crap that's going on in your head. Anybody else do that? That never makes my life better. I have to say, I'm stewing about crap. Who can I help? Who can I... That's why I tell everybody I work with to call me all day, because if I'm stewing about some crap, when they call me, I can listen to their crap. It works, right? Mark hears my crap all the time. How's that working for you, Mark? There you go. Boy, he can tell you stories. All right. And it takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge. Look up imperious, Stu, I don't know. When to yield would be heartache. So, I think that's good stuff. I think it's worth spending time with yourself and your sponsor on this. You can listen to people teach this. I've listened to people go over these pages in the past. I think it's something, if you're in a relationship now, you might want to think about your relationship and what you're bringing into it, the ideals you have for it. How you want to be in the relationship, ask God to help you mold them. And it certainly changes how you see the person you're really. It says required, necessary, essential.
Overbearing,
domineering, or overbearing need. I think the best thing you can do out of this, if you're in a relationship now, is understand that what you bring in is what you get. And if you're love, patient, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate, you're going to get it back. Whenever you become critical of the other person, you realize that you're seeing them wrong, that they were all God's kids. And it's helped me a lot. So I don't know if this was helpful tonight, but it's powerful pages, and we'll open it up, and then I'll be gone a couple Wednesdays, and then we'll do the second step proposition fear exercise, if I make it back. There you go. Thank you.